Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back. We made it to another UAP Weekly. Stephen Diener here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition. And I am so excited for this one today because this is going to be an incredible interview with the one and only Robert Salas, who was just at the Mexican UAP hearings, a week and a half ago when those were held, and obviously made international headlines, global news, if you will, when the reveal of the Peruvian alien mummies were shown to the world. And that was obviously the moment that everyone spoke about. But there was a lot more that happened there as well, and a lot more that was said. And we're going to talk about all of that and more in a very in-depth conversation here in Robert Salas's, I believe, I'll ask him to make sure, but I believe this is his first interview since the UAP hearings there in Mexico. So that we're going to cover a lot of ground here today, and I cannot wait for you to hear it. Before we get into that, though, just want to real quick touch on the controversy and kind of the, well, for lack of a better term, the weirdness happening around this F-35 story out of South Carolina. Just my observations, not really anything, you know, breaking or, I guess new groundbreaking stuff here on that story. But just from what I can tell, there's obviously something going on there. I think you probably agree. Just the details don't make any sense where you have. So we'll paint the picture. Obviously, last week you have this story of, well, I guess, well, maybe 4 or 5 days ago. But either way, you have this story of a F-35 jet pilot ejects from this jet, one of the most highly advanced, you know, aircraft that we have that we know about, known to the public in our U.S. military. And the pilot ejects, and this thing keeps going on autopilot. The other airplane, his co-pilot there, you know, or his wingman, I guess I should say, turns around, flies back to base while this unmanned jet just wanders around and eventually crashes in the backwoods of South Carolina. So all that said, everybody's wondering, what the heck happened? Why did this pilot eject? Why was it left on autopilot? Why was the transponder not turned on? So it could have been, you know, easily located. And, you know, I was wondering, obviously I had a lot of questions just like everybody else, okay? Because, again, you have to be one of the most highly trained, skilled pilots in the world just to be considered to fly the F-35, okay? It's that and the stealth bomber. You have to be, like, top of the top, like Top Gun Maverick type of person, okay, to fly one of those aircraft. Again, just to be considered. So you don't have someone who's going to make, you know, ridiculous mistakes flying those planes. So look, human error is always an option. I get that. But again, you have to be extremely, extraordinarily qualified to fly one of those things. So it's unlikely, I guess I'll just put it that way, that they would make some type of egregious mistake like leaving the plane on autopilot after they eject for seemingly no reason. But we don't know. Was there a mechanical malfunction? So what we were hoping was we would get some type of clarification from the U.S. military. Well, we got that, but it was an absolute joke. And that's what I wanted to touch on, because they come out and they say, well, the weather was bad and the pilot forgot to turn off the autopilot feature and forgot to turn on the transponder. Okay, so like I said, these things are not only specially made to fly through bad weather, but why was his co-pilot not affected by the bad weather? Not, I keep saying co-pilot, his wingman not affected by the bad weather. And according to the reports, on that day, there was no bad weather in the skies where they were flying in South Carolina. So what is happening here? And again, going back to how qualified you have to be just to be considered to fly one of those airplanes, a guy like that is not going to forget to turn on the transponder or forget to turn off autopilot. So there's something going on. Now I'm even more curious because the military is obviously covering this up with a ridiculous farce of a story. This is like that's worse than, you know, saying it's weather balloons that you saw. That's just, I mean, how stupid do you think that we are that we're going to believe a story like that, like a backstory, an explanation like that? It's completely unbelievable in every sense of the word. So now the question becomes, and now that we've added fuel to the fire here, what really happened? Are we now I'm going to ask the question, okay? Are we talking about some type of UAP technology that interfered with this airplane? I didn't want to bring it up before because I feel like I don't want to jump to that right away. But now that the military is covering this up, obviously with that explanation that they gave, that has led me to believe, okay, there is something going on here. So I do have to ask the question, were these fighter jets chasing something? Were they chasing a UAP? What, did the UAP interfere with their controls? We've heard those stories before. That's happened many times to pilots in their sightings. What is the military hiding? Or, worse yet, were they hacked by a foreign adversary? They would hide that for sure because they don't want that to get out. That would be extremely scary if that was the case. So something happened here. If it was just a regular mechanical malfunction, I feel like, it was some glitch in the system, something, I feel like that would have come out and they could have just said that. You know what? If you're going to lie about it, just make something up more believable. Like it was a mechanical malfunction that led to him having to eject from his fighter jet, his F-35. And, it wouldn't allow him to take it out of autopilot. Like you can't come up with anything better as far as an excuse goes. You have to say it was bad weather and he forgot. I mean, come on, guys. What are we doing here? So we got to keep an eye on this F-35 story. We may never hear anything from it again, but I'm not buying this explanation from the military. I'm sorry. There is something else going on there, and now I really want to know. Now, I'm not going to touch on that with Robert Salas because we've got in more to this hearing that took place in Mexico. So without further ado, I wanted to get that part out of the way. I want to now bring on Robert Salas here. So delighted, so happy, and honestly just beyond honored at this point that the esteemed Robert Salas has joined me again here on UAP Weekly, especially with now after everything that happened in Mexico during the congressional UAP hearings that they held. And of course, he being one of the witnesses that was there. Really excited to have him on today to talk about his experiences and everything that went down. So Robert Salas, thank you again so much for joining me here today on UAP.
It's a pleasure, Stephen. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to have you. And there's so much that's gone on in the past week. And I guess if I'm not mistaken, is this the first interview that you've done since the Mexico hearings?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, I'm even more honored then. Thank you. So what, I guess just starting there, what was it like to be at that hearing? I mean, there were a lot of names there along with you, like Ryan Graves, Avi Loeb, Ronnie Vernet, a lot of people who are obviously, well respected within this discussion, within this community, like yourself. So what was it like being at that hearing and kind of being on that same team, so to speak, with all those guys and more?
Oh, it's a real honor for me. I am Mexican-American. My parents were born in Mexico. In fact, one of my ancestors was an interim president of Mexico for a short time.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And so it was great to be there, especially, of course, my favorite subject. I didn't get a chance to talk to too many of the other participants. It was a pretty well organized situation where we had to be a certain place, certain time. So, it was really enjoyable to meet them all. And it was an honor for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'm really happy that you were able to be there and that they asked you to do this, because when we spoke last time, it was actually following the American congressional hearing. And, we spoke a lot about that with David Grush and everybody, with Ryan Graves being at that one as well, along with David Fravor. And, uh-oh, we talked about, well, shoot, why didn't they ask you to go? I mean, you definitely should be invited to one of these things. So I was really happy to see that, you had that moment where you could get out there and kind of talk about what your knowledge of this situation. How do you feel your story specifically, your testimony was taken during that hearing? Did they take it to heart?
Well, there's a little bit of difficulty. We had some some things going on there. Well, first of all, it was televised from the chamber itself. They call their essentially their House of Representatives chamber of deputies, so it's a little different. But they televised it right from the chamber, something like C-SPAN would do, and they had translators, and I was speaking in English, and the translation was coming over in Spanish, and it kind of overwhelmed my English. Maybe I didn't speak loud enough, but I heard the complaint that a lot of people couldn't understand what I was saying because it was transmitted to the U.S. You could actually link to the YouTube channel for this chamber, and so that was a little bit dicey, but I did get my points across, I think, and so that went fairly well, I think. But again, I'm going to have to, I'm working on now to get a full transcript in English only, and I'll try to publish that on the somewhere on the web, either my website or here on Twitter or someplace like that. I've got a YouTube channel also.
Yeah, that's right. No, and I'm glad you're going to be able to do that. And I'm just curious here, and this is just my mind wandering here, Robert, so maybe I'm way off base. Did anybody else have those issues as far as, you know, the translation? Really?
Yeah. You know, again, some of the people spoke in Spanish directly, and they complained a little bit about the translation to English, that they didn't get everything right. So that was a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering. I mean, and you know, this is, again, this is just how my mind works. I start to think of all these possibilities. It could definitely be just a technical glitch. Do you feel it was just a technical glitch, or do you feel like that this was a, you know, an intentional effort to try to kind of jumble up what you guys were trying to tell your stories that day and your testimony?
No, I don't think there was an intentional effort to waylay it. It's just a question of interpretation of what the speaker is saying and trying to translate it in real time. That's a very difficult thing to do, I think.
Lost in translation sometimes, I guess, when it comes to a couple of things. Yeah. I got you. Well, no,
we even had a speaker from Japan,
right?
Which was interesting. No, that was one of the positive aspects of this. Is we had speakers from Argentina and Japan, and both those countries are now considering doing the same thing.
That's fantastic.
In other words, having a special session of their government body to consider the whole phenomenon.
That's fantastic, and you're so right. This really was kind of like a global event, especially, you know, when it came to the reveal, if you will, of you know, the 1,000-year-old alien mummies, which we're gonna get to. I know for anybody listening, you're probably thinking, ask him about the mummies, and we will. We're gonna talk about it for sure. But there's a lot to get to on this, so we will get to that. But you're right when it comes to just the global aspect of this, you know, because I mentioned obviously yourself with Ryan Graves and Avi Loeb and Ronnie Vernet, but there was an extensive list of witnesses there: France, Japan, Brazil, of course, with Ronnie. You mentioned Argentina, so it was good to see, and of course Mexico. It was great to see, you know, kind of this global community come together in this setting and you know, every kind of corner of the world talk about this.
Absolutely, that was a highlight for me. It was an international affair. There was a lot of interest. We had a big press contingent there at the hearing, and I'm very glad I participated, even with a little hang-up we had with mummies. But I'm very happy I did it, and hope to do it again, hopefully in the U.S. this time, next time.
Right, a little easier travel, at least.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So, but when it comes to, you know, you mentioned Argentina, and I'm going off base a little bit here, so I'll you know, kind of get back on base after this. But the only reason I bring this up is because I just did an episode of UAP last week, as of this recording, talking about some rumors that were coming out of Argentina. There's a lot of activity being reported anyway coming out of Argentina. A lot of UAP activity, even going back to a week or two ago, where they were discussing this, a base, like a naval air force base in the Buenos Aires province of Argentina, where they were actually supposedly having some type of battle with UAPs, and they were like landing on the base. Do you know anything about that, Robert?
Not specifically, but I do know there's been a lot of activity in Argentina, and there has been for many, many years. Thanks to Andrea Simondini. She's head of the UFO study group there that has been most active. They've established a relationship with the Argentina Air Force and other government officials, and she's trying real hard right now to get their government to have a similar hearing as we had in Mexico, and because again, like you say, there has been a lot of activity. In fact, all over South America, doesn't get enough attention. All the activity going on there. There have been many very interesting cases. Of course, we know about Varginha, but in Brazil, there have been cases where UAP have been shot at by fighter pilots. I don't know if and recently, in fact, the day after the hearing, I heard a report that a civilian airliner over Tijuana, I think it was coming into land in Tijuana, Mexico, had a collision alert alarm go off the cockpit, and it basically said, we're about to hit ground, we're about to crash. That's how collision alert systems work. If you get too close to the ground, or if an aircraft gets too close to you, and it turns out it was an object, a lighted bright white light object underneath the aircraft. And I don't believe they got video of it, but certainly the pilots saw it and reported it. So, and this is one of the major issues that Ryan Graves was there for, and that is to consider the issues of flight safety, both civilian and military. And it's a shame he had to leave early, because there was a pilots association, pilots group, that was supposed to meet with him the day after the hearing, and I think Ryan had to depart for some reason, but hopefully that'll get back on track. I'm sure it'll be a subject of discussion in the U.S. Congress in the future, because it is certainly an issue, and that is these objects have been seen very close to both civilian and military aircraft. The concern, of course, is a collision on board.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, could you imagine that actually happening, where you have this, a collision with UAP? My gosh, just the ramifications of that kind of sends a chill down my spine. And, yourself and Ryan Graves and others have been trying to warn of this now. This goes back, as you know, Robert, these reports go back to World War II, with the reports of, the Foo Fighters, as it became known. So this isn't something that, just started happening now. Maybe some people are just becoming aware of it now, but these are things that have been happening for a long time, and you kind of blew my mind actually with that report out of Tijuana. I hadn't heard about that. You said that was recent?
Yes, I heard about it the day just before I left, so it was a day or two after the hearing.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. So it kind of makes you wonder why these things are getting so close. What is their intention? Why get that close? And that's one of the many questions that we're trying to find out, I guess, and why we're having these hearings. Do you feel like Robert, that with the global contingencies essentially essentially that was there at the hearing. Are there other countries that are taking this more seriously than the United States?
Oh, absolutely. I mentioned the member of the Japanese Diet, again, similar to our Congress, was there. And he spoke, and he's also considering very seriously having a hearing in Japan soon, I think.
Wow.
And absolutely, all countries should take this seriously. And of course, the main thing is being honest with their citizens, trying to get disclosure in all of these countries so that we can get a better handle. The more information we've got that's official, let's say, information, that becomes, you know, real data that can be analyzed. And that's exactly what we need to try to figure out what and try to get to the bottom of all this.
Have you found that other countries are more forthcoming with their citizens? Because obviously, you know, with what we deal here with the United States, it's a little, it's like pulling teeth, obviously, as you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
but,
do you
the
see
progress
that?
The U.S. has made in the regulatory process, you know, requirements such as the new Senate amendment and the NDAA will have, I think, an impact with other countries. They'll try to do the same thing, hopefully. I think they're all take it more seriously, and partly because of the initiatives we've seen in the U.S.
Mm, well, that's good to hear. What was, I'm curious, Robert, what was your mood heading into the hearing versus how you felt coming out of it once it was all said and done?
Mood, huh? Well, my mood, I was, motivated, highly motivated to see it happen. I think it went off pretty well technically, except for the translations, of course. But coming out of it, again, I was disappointed what happened with the so-called mummies. I think that was a mistake, and I think Jaime Musan probably agrees with me now. If you want to jump into it.
Let's do it. Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering. I think that's a good transition. Have you had conversations with Jaime Musan about this subject?
Not with Jaime, per se, but of course, I've been reading the Twitter feed also about him being possibly charged by the government of Peru for facilitating, let's say, I don't know what his role was, but he did have access to these beings. Let me just go back a little bit. In 2018, I think it was, or 2017, I went to it was a presentation by some of the scientists involved with this discovery. These mummies were, and I'm sorry to use that term because some people don't like it, but
that's
easier for me to talk about it.
Yeah, it is what it is.
These mummies were discovered, I think, around 2015, possibly 2014, but we'll say 2015, by, we'll just call him Mario, an individual who, I guess, was looking for something like that, some artifact. They were brought to the attention of Thierry Jamin. Again, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Jamin.
Okay.
And if people go to his website, it's called the-alien-project.com. They can see his website and all the work he did early on to try to validate the authenticity of these objects. I went down there in 2018, I think it was, to this presentation, which was done again before a member of Congress, of the Peruvian Congress. It was in a big room, but we had experts there that had done analysis on DNA, analysis on the aging. They had done CT scans, X-rays, and so we had some medical people that looked at these scans and concluded that all of them concluded and that these were integral beings at one time. In other words, they had walked on the earth at one time. And of course, what little I know about carbon dating, I understand that there's isotope of carbon, radio isotope of carbon that exists in our atmosphere, which we all breathe in and take in, and somehow it gets absorbed in our bodies. And there's a certain ratio of that radioisotope, a decay of that. Again, this is a little bit technical, and this is one of the reasons it shouldn't have been brought up in the hearing, because there's a lot of technical aspects of these studies that most people don't really understand or know about. But bottom line is, if you have lived on Earth, you've absorbed some of this radioisotope of carbon, and after you die, people can check on it and see what that ratio of radioisotope is.
Gotcha.
The decay material. And by that, since since it's well known that ratio, a normal ratio in existence today is well known, they can determine the age because radioactive decay is highly reliable. That rate of decay is highly reliable.
See. Okay.
And from that, you can determine the age. So I'll leave it to the experts to explain all that.
No, it makes sense. So that's basically how they're able to do the carbon dating. And they come out with the, I guess what they're saying, about 1,000 years old for one of the mummies.
Yeah, for these so-called. Supposedly. But again, I don't know whether Jaime Maussan was talking about these particular beings or the ones that were held in Peru by under the auspices of Terry Hamin. So in fact, Terry Hamin put out a statement after the announcement by Jaime Maussan stating that these beings that he displayed were not the ones that he had analyzed. Wanted to make a point of that. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of evidence, not just the aging, but the DNA evidence, and I won't go into that too much except the fact that the DNA sequencing was carried out on the bodies that Terry has access to, and that's about 3 or 4, something like that, that he has and has carried out testing. And it's not just Terry himself. It's we're talking about certified laboratories, some even in the U.S., Canada, Russia. They all participated in some of this testing. And in fact, currently there is I hope I don't reveal anything too serious here, but there is a university in the United States that's carrying on some testing on these we'll call them mummies. So the point is, further testing is continuing. I think the whole objective was to get as much testing done, scientific testing, to validate the authenticity of these beings. Now, whether or not they're extraterrestrial is a whole other question.
Right.
It's a whole other discussion. And again, this is another mistake I think Jaime made, is stating that these were extraterrestrial, which I don't think we might have a hard time proving that.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment and a really an incredible claim. So no, that, and that's really great info, Robert, on all that. So is it basically being asserted that these, you know, alien mummies, so to speak, that Jaime Maussan had at the congressional hearing, are these being talked about as something different than what is already in Peru? Or are these those mummies that were discovered, so to speak, back in 2014-15? Is there a different set?
It is my understanding that the mummies that were presented at the hearing were discovered by this Mario person.
Okay.
But they are not the specific mummies where these extensive tests have been formed. Hmm. That's what I understood from Kiri Hamin's statement.
Pretty incredible. And to think that they're studying this too, you know, in an American university, and we obviously, you know, we don't know which one that is, and that's fine. I don't want you to get too far deep in, if you, you know, it's not to reveal too much if you're not supposed to. But you know, that apparently some of these studies are being taken seriously. And just yesterday, even, you know, as we record this, they were doing studies in Mexico at a hospital, and they had 3, I guess, independent doctors, a director of the hospital, and you know, like a radiographical technician. They did a CT scan, they did a regular X-ray, and they were saying on these specific mummies that were presented at the hearing that they, according to these scans, CT and X-ray, that these were whole skeletons. They were not put together. They were not manipulated. So I mean, what do you make of that?
Yeah, like I say, there's a lot of evidence that supports that fact that these are not something that were put together by individuals. And one of the things they point to is there are eggs in some of these mummies.
That's right.
And they have actually taken some of the material out of the interior of the eggs and determined that they are indeed organic material. There are also very intricate ligaments leading to the hands and the feet. There is something like an oviduct, meaning a duct where eggs are developed in one of the beings, one or more, that shows the development of an egg in that duct. So there's a lot of intricate stuff that, you know, presumably people that lived 1,000 years ago would not have had the technical ability to make, even from body parts of other animals.
It's fascinating. I mean, there was even some talk of an element called, I think it's pronounced osmium.
Yes.
And they said that was supposedly found like a plate of osmium covering the rib cage, right? And that's
right.
And that would be very hard to do as far as even going back 1,000 years. How would that that, I guess, get there. And that's a very strange thing to be present inside of a body.
Yes. In many of these bodies, there are so-called metal implants. Hmm. Also, some part of the discovery were the large hands, and they had circular implants in the top of the hand, made out of a copper gold alloy. So a lot of strange things are going on with these things.
Yeah.
They deserve to be researched carefully, scientifically evaluated carefully. So I know it was, like I said, I think it was a mistake to bring all this up during this hearing because of the, let's say, incomplete explanation of how it was they got a hold of these mummies and how they've been evaluated scientifically. It was just an incomplete discussion, and that's what caused all the, the rigmarole around it.
Yeah, sure did. It kind of caused a worldwide ruckus. Were you aware of that, Robert, while you were down there in Mexico?
No.
Were you aware of how much coverage this thing really, it went global, this story?
I wasn't aware this was going to happen. Of course, like I said, I learned about the mummies in 2018, so about 5 years ago. Mm. And as a result of listening to the scientists talk about what tests have already been done, I was convinced there was something to this. In addition, I had had an experience where I was convinced I saw the hands of the beings, these extended hands and fingers, and that's what motivated me to go down there and find out more. So I don't think your audience or anyone should give up on the possibility that these are very real. They at one point walked on the earth, but they are not, according to the DNA, which was compared to a large database of DNA that's available of different creatures that live or have lived on Earth. There's no comparison. They can't find a match. And that's what leads us to think that they might be extraterrestrial. But that certainly has not been established.
Fascinating. It really is, because I'll be honest with you, Robert. I came into this subject speaking with you. I've done, obviously a lot of research and observed it like everybody else over the past week. Specifically, I've known about these as well, these specific mummies, so to speak, that were presented at the hearing. I've thought of these, I think about 3 years ago, 4 years ago was when I first came across this story, and it was fascinating to me then, and I didn't really know what to make of it ever since then. But to hear you talk about it, it's kind of mind-boggling, because it kind of sounds like that there really is some validity to these claims, that these things are not some type of, put together hoaxed thing with animal bones and then covered in paper mache. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like this might be some type of real entity that can't be denied because it's been proven by science. And I guess what that entity is remains to be seen. Is that kind of your stance on this at this point?
Absolutely. I agree with that. We can't discount the possibility that these are authentic. In other words, I know there's a lot of rumors out there that this was a hoax perpetrated intentionally. It's not. These things have been studied extensively. And again, I encourage everybody to go to that website. Also, if any of you are a Facebook page, you can go to a page that I've got called Nazca Mummies, I think it's called, where I've presented some of the evidence that was presented when I went down there in 2018.
Pretty incredible. What was the reaction like? I'm curious, because, I mean, you were really one of the few privileged people in that room, of course, aside from media. But as far as the witnesses are concerned, you had a front row seat to this. And like you said, you didn't know that these things were going to be presented. What was the reaction like in the room? Was it shock? Was it confusion? Was it a little frustration?
All of the above, Stephen.
man.
like I said, we had a lot of media there, and everybody wanted to have good photographs of these mummies. And so people were shouting in the chamber, for people to get out of the way so they could get a good photo, et cetera. There was a lot of confusion there. Again, it took away from our testimony a little bit. It was a distraction. Put it that way.
That's
big,
right.
Distraction from the comments that we had to say, and it kind of got lost in translation, like I said. So the whole thing could have been handled a lot better.
Yeah. So I'm curious, is that why? Because I saw Ryan Graves. I've never spoken to Ryan Graves. I would love to. If he ever has time, maybe he's hearing this right now. But I've never spoken to him personally. But I did see that he wrote on social media that he was pretty frustrated with the way that all went down. He kind of called it, in not so many words, kind of like a circus. circus, so to speak, a sideshow in the way that everything went down. And I think that frustration comes from, like you said, it distracted from, you know, real kind of hard fact testimony that you guys were giving and trying to raise awareness, you know, for pilot safety and for passenger safety, really, when it comes to what's in our skies flying around, you know, passenger jets or fighter jets. And there's a lot of testimony that went in there that day, and this kind of really overshadowed everything. So do you think that's why it was a mistake in your estimation to present this the way that it was presented?
Yes, exactly. It was a big distraction. And like I say, most of us, while we're somewhat, many of us understand a little bit of science, we don't deal with some of the scientific subjects like DNA sequencing, right, and carbon dating on an everyday basis. So I think Mr. Masson should have had the experts and warned the public that this was coming, and had the real experts of that could have explained this in layman's terms. So it was a diversion. I know Mr. Graves was disappointed with the way it turned out. I think we all were. And it detracted from the message we were trying to give in our particular talk.
Yeah, that is the part that is, you know, kind of a shame about the whole thing, that it did detract from your testimony, from Ryan Graves' testimony, and a lot of important testimony that was taking place that day kind of got lost in the shuffle. So that part is definitely unfortunate. You know, you can only hope that maybe people go back and listen to some of the things that were said, because it was important stuff that you guys were presenting. And hopefully, too, we get more of these hearings. Have you heard any whispers, any rumors of, you know, in the United States or otherwise, more of these hearings taking place? I know you say maybe Japan, but even outside of that, too?
Well, I understood from Twitter post that Representative Burchett stated that he thinks that there will be another hearing in the U.S. I mentioned the member of Congress from Japan that was presenting in Mexico did indicate to us in a lunch we had with him that he was very interested in trying to get his country to have such a hearing. I know that Andrea Simondini is going to try hard to get one in Argentina, and also I think there may be one in an attempt to get one in Peru.
Oh, wow.
And so in that respect, this was successful because I think it generated more interest with other countries to have more open hearings about the subject and hear some of the witnesses in their countries.
Right. So maybe in the end there was, like, you know, for the greater good type of thing. Who knows? I guess we'll see, right, you know, how it develops. Do you think, and this is just a thought in my own head here, which is dangerous, but do you think that this goes down the route of like a UN General Assembly type of meeting? I mean, would that be something that do you think would be a good idea? You know, because we talk about international and things like that and Lost in Translation, to kind of get the type of crowd that you had in Mexico, but in a General Assembly type of way in New York to gather and talk about this. That might be a pretty big deal.
I don't know if you've heard, but there is an effort going on right now to get the General Assembly to approve of a United Nations office.
Oh.
This is being orchestrated by the country of San Marino, actually.
Oh, wow.
Has approved an effort to present this to the United Nations. And any country represented in the United Nations can do this. And it was tried back, I think it was 1978, but by the government of Grenada. But then the Grenada invasion took place, and that went south. But now there's another attempt by the country of San Marino, like I said, which is a small republic on the Italian peninsula.
Right, right.
Are you familiar with that, Steve?
Yeah, just the location. I've never been there, but I've heard it's
beautiful. It's beautiful. I've been there.
And wow.
It's a beautiful location right there by the sea. I'm not sure if that's the Mediterranean. No, maybe not. Anyway, it's a beautiful location.
Yeah, I've heard. I've wanted to go there.
And that effort will continue, as I understand it, even though that there's been a little problem with turnover of government there.
Wow. All right. Well, geez, I didn't know that. So maybe we will actually get some type of, UN assembly or measure from the UN. I guess in that fashion, Robert, where do you see this going next? Where do you see this conversation kind of heading, as now we have, you know, a U.S. congressional hearing and a Mexican congressional hearing under our belt? Do you see this conversation continuing down this path that we're talking about? Or do you think people are going to get distracted by something and then it dies down for another 5 years before it gets picked up again?
Well, I'm optimistic that the interest will continue. The question I have, even though these new Senate requirements coming up were signature at the end of this year on the in the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act of 2024. We'll have some pretty stiff requirements for U.S. government agencies turn over what they've got on UAP. The question I have is, will that happen? Will that be enforced? And how will it be enforced? Because of the, let's say, the very complicated secrecy rules that we've got throughout the government. It's going to be tough. And I still believe that there's a very strong influence by a secret group that's an international in nature, actually, that's going to try hard to maintain these secrets. And my question is, how well will we be able to penetrate that hole that they have? Because it involves not just government agencies, but also industries, corporations, companies that have been doing some of this work, classified secret work with re-engineering or back engineering, recovered craft, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, you know, who you thought would be involved in a group like that as far as government agencies or, you know, private companies. So kind of like a mix of it all.
Yeah, it's called the military industrial complex.
Right. Exactly it. Yeah, well, that's it right there. And I guess speaking of that, and this is a controversial subject, but I mean, I feel remiss if I didn't ask the question because you bring up, you know, the NDAA Act with 2024. Even, you know, Representative Burchett had sent out a letter co-signed by Nancy Mace and a couple of other congresspeople stating that they wanted, you know, basically a congressional order saying that to the Pentagon to hand over your records on reverse engineering and these black sites where you're doing, supposedly doing all this, and to do that by September 26th. And as of this recording, that's a week away, Robert. So with that deadline in mind of next week, as, you know, again, as we talk here today, and then we're talking about 2024 in the NDAA, if these, you know, the military industrial complex, so to speak, doesn't comply with those deadlines, again, controversial, but is it possible that there's some type of covert military force, a splinter group or something, that forcefully takes this stuff?
As you know, Stephen, the president is the commander in chief of all U.S. forces, so he would have to get involved to demand certain things happen. So again, I don't know how that would how would that take place. There are people out there, as and I'm a big supporter of David Grush. He claims that there are people that he knows are cognizant of where these things are located, which companies have been involved, etc. But that information hasn't been able to be transmitted to the Congress because they apparently cannot find a proper skiff to reveal that, which is hard to believe. But so again, I'm hopeful that this will not be dropped, that the interest will continue. I think that will happen. I think enough people have their hackles up in Congress that they're not going to drop this thing at all. You know, the hard requirements, there won't be deadlines for those till next year because the 2024 NDAA has not been signed yet. They're still deliberating on the wording for that, and that won't be signed till about December of this year. However, there are some reporting requirements, I think, that are due soon. I know Arrow has a reporting requirement with regards to the historical record, some of the testimonies they've been taking, like my own. They're supposed to be releasing a report on that soon, before the end of the year, and we'll see what comes from that. And again, it's a matter of how dedicated the politicians are to getting to the bottom of this, because of course, you know, there's politics involved here. We've got an election coming up next year, and so it's going to take some courage, I guess, political courage to keep pressure on.
That you know, that's a great point heading into an election. You're already in election season, so that's a great point to see how kind of all this mixes up. And I want to bring this up before we go here, Robert, because this is something that, I don't know, it's kind of a question that I find interesting, and it's one that actually I'm going to be covering in kind of in detail in a later episode of UAP, as I put together, you know, some materials for that. But I'm curious your thoughts on the subject of disclosure versus religion. And what I mean by that is, you have people, you have maybe, I don't know if detractors is too strong of a word, but you have people who say that, well, the U.S. government or the governments of the world, and maybe even with the Vatican included, don't want to have true disclosure because you would have this upheaval of the world's religion. You have an upheaval of, you know, Christianity, of course, dominant religion within the United States and, you know, a lot throughout the world in most cases. So you have this talk on that end, and then you have some talk on the other end that says, well, you know, that shouldn't be the case. It would actually heighten the awareness of, you know, of a Supreme Creator creator of God, that there would be all these other beings throughout the universe. So I'm wondering kind of where you see that discussion. Is it, and I'm sorry to go so deep here, but do you see that as being like a real issue in the disclosure effort, like a real barrier of religion? Is religion a barrier to this?
I think it's a real area that ought to be considered, the impact on religions. I've been in contact with a fellow by the name of Sabir Hussain from India, and I've asked him about that with regard to the religious aspect. And he is knowledgeable about the Islamic religion. I don't think he is Muslim, but in the Quran, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, but in the Quran, he tells me that there is a concept called the jinn, J-I-N-N, and maybe in other religions also, but the jinn are considered some kind of disciples of Satan, and these beings, these extraterrestrial beings, if it's proven that they do exist and are have come to Earth, which I, most of us know that they indeed have, could be this jinn spoke about in the Quran. So there is overlap with the Islamic religion, and of course I've heard from many of my Christian friends that some of them think that these beings are again some evil beings that interact with humans to again turn them against Jesus Christ and in favor of what Satan wants. So there's going to be some complications, I think, but again, I think these issues can be resolved if we keep our heads and not get carried away too much.
Right. Yeah, because there are a lot of theories with it, obviously. You know, and of course, it's, you bring up the other side where people say, well, what if it's, you know, a fallen angel type of scenario? And it's, right. It, you know, and that's the thing. And I think it does kind of end up being a barrier in a way. And that's not to disparage any one religion, of course. You know, on my end, you know, I find myself, I consider myself to be a religious person personally. But it's an interesting discussion because there is kind of a, you know, I keep using the word barrier, roadblock, whatever you want to say, that I think needs to be broached with this discussion. How does, you know, organized religion approach this if we do come across some type of disclosure that might be undeniable, you know?
Right. It's, I like to think that ET is here to help us evolve on a higher level or a higher plane of existence. And by that, I mean we establish core values that we can all embrace and allow us to move forward in our evolutionary path. It seems like we kind of lost track of these core values, and I know that's not particularly religious, but it has to do with you know, how we see ourselves with respect to each other and in the world. And anyway, that's a long discussion, I think. But
maybe we can say that for another time, I suppose.
Say
but
that for another time.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but that's, I still think that's really well said, Robert. And I think we've covered a lot of bases here today, so I don't want to take up much more of your time. And I think honestly, that's a good way to kind of end our discussion for today. But I hate to let you go unless, you know, you have anything else on your mind. I mean, the floor is yours as far as, you know, anything else that you want to broach here today with this subject, or, you know, that even went down during the congressional hearing.
I'll just say that I'm still optimistic that we'll get more disclosure. I don't know how much more disclosure, but like I say, I think there's a lot of interest within the Congress now, the U.S. Congress, U.S. government, to try to learn more. I hope we have more witness testimonies, because I think that's the key. Get as many witnesses before the public as we can, and learn as much as we can, and try to break through this huge barrier of secrecy that we've had for so long.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And I think that's really great, Robert. Thank you again so much for joining me here today on UAP to discuss all of this. I can't wait to see what happens next. And I hope as things do continue to progress, we can stay in touch and, you know, look forward to having you on again as things continue to go on.
You bet, Stephen.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Robert, joining me here on UAP Weekly. Hopefully talk to you again soon. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again to Robert Salas for that. That was just, that was thrilling, honestly, to hear him. There is so much there. I mean, just to think that these alien mummies, there is a possibility, whatever these things are, that they are real because of the scans that were done and everything that we just talked about there. You know, the idea that this is now becoming a global pursuit for disclosure. We talk about Japan. We talk about Argentina. There's so much happening. It was, I'm just so happy that we got to do that interview and get all that information out there. And, you know, like you heard me say, hopefully we can talk again as things continue to progress. But I'm going to leave it there for now. Still working on episode 74, by the way. I do want to get that out to you soon. But this interview with Robert Salas popped up, so I wanted to take that opportunity. So I put episode 74 kind of on the back burner again and working on a couple of other things. I'm really excited about a possible interview that is going to take place. I don't want to put too much hype behind it because it has not been confirmed. But once it is confirmed, hopefully soon, I'll let you know what that interview is going to be, because it's something that I've been trying to get done for the past few months, actually, to have this particular person on the show. So I'll let you know what's happening there once I get the confirmation. And I promise episode 74 is coming. You heard me say to Robert Salas kind of the backstory, the idea that I'm going to be discussing there in 74, you know, when it comes to religion versus disclosure and things like that. There's a lot that I want to get to with that subject and a lot of stories that go into that. But with all that said, that is going to do it for today. This was an incredible experience. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Of course, be sure to continue to download and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, on all the major platforms, of course. And you can even catch up on past episodes if you haven't heard those. Those are always archived on there. You always find them in the same spot as you find the new ones. So you can always check those out. Or if you just want to hear it again, I mean, if you want to, that's up to you. I'm not going to stop you. You can also follow the show on Twitter/X if you aren't already. At UA Podcast 850. That's at UA Podcast 850. And as always, you can send me an email at sdiener UAP. Again, that's sdiener UAP at gmail.com if you'd like to email me there. I know some of you have emailed me and I see those. I promise I'm going to get to them. I don't want to leave anybody hanging, so I do respond to everything. It may not be right away, may not be within a few days, and I apologize for that, but I do respond to everything. So if you have something that you need to say, want to say, and you'd rather do an email form, you can do it there at that address for Gmail. So with all that said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, like I said, as much as I did, and I look forward so much to speaking with you again soon on UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. It's Stephen Diener right here. Be well, and as always, thank you so much. Talk to you again soon.